Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Oh yes, indeed, powered by the SID Media. Mfundisi, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, listeners. How are you doing? It's good to have you back. You were absent yesterday.
Yes.
Back today.
Yes. Well, I'm back for the rest of the week. I just had an emergency yesterday, but we're here today talking about three angels' messages. And so yesterday you touched on the importance of going through the three angels' messages within the framework of the everlasting gospel and God's eternal love. And with that in mind, we're then going to be going through this topic once again today. So Mfundis, please take us through these messages from the perspective that you would like us to carefully consider after the intro that you made yesterday.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you again for doing the great work with AWR, for sitting there every day doing the broadcast for the three angels' message. This is the crux of what we are doing.
Yeah.
And so I want to highlight something else to you today that I think is important for us before we get maybe tomorrow into the details about the three angels' message.
Mm-hmm.
Messages. At the heart of everything we find ourselves embroiled in, involved in, caught up in, is really the issue of worship.
Right.
And the three angels' messages are about the worship of God.
Okay.
You look at the first one, for example, it would say, fear God. The second one would say, whoever worships the false system or participates in that false system will have what the third angel calls the consequences of these worship systems. And so at the heart of it all is what started in heaven as a war of worship, or the politics of worship, if I may call it that, where a created being, an angel, started to demand worship for itself, demand what was due to God for itself, and was caught up in a rebellion. Satan, the angel that was a covering cherubim, was now involved in a situation where he was saying, but hang on, why are we worshiping God? Why are we paying allegiance to God? And so because of that rebellious spirit, he was chucked out of. When he was chucked out, he then targeted humanity, who God created for himself so that they could be his people. Again, the question of allegiance, the question of love, the question of worship comes up again.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he targeted them, he wanted to deviate worship from God again, but to himself. And in the pretext of being equal with God and so on and so forth. So at the heart of everything that is happening in the three angels' message throughout scripture, in truth, is the question of worship. You hear it coming through and through. Who do you worship?
Mm-hmm.
Do we worship God? Do we worship ourselves? Do we worship Satan? Or do we worship, even when he's tempting Christ, he wants him to worship him. So the issue of worship is really at the heart of everything that God wants to warn us about, wants us to be careful about when it comes to the three angels' messages.
Now, Mfundisi, very interesting that you are taking that angle of worship this afternoon. By the way, are you driving or what? I'm getting some feedback there. I'm not sure if you're driving or...
Yeah, I'm running away from load shedding. So
I see. All right. Now, you know, the issue of worship is truly, truly central to the three angels' messages, as it were. However, you know, as you say that the worship belongs to God and God alone, is there a chance that there is no worship at all? So one does not worship any, not the devil, not God, just they choose to be indifferent, or there's no such a thing?
All right, this is the beauty again. This is part of the lasting gospel I was talking about yesterday. That God has allowed anyone, God does not want to be worshipped robotically. Does not want to be worshipped out of force, out of compulsion, out of a sense of obligation. He wants to be worshipped voluntarily.
Yes.
And so when God set out to roll out his plan, his everlasting gospel, he gave the option for worshipping or not worshipping at all. He gave us the option to worship or not to worship, because he does not want to be worshipped because you are terrified of him, because you are afraid of him, because you are horrified of him. So people can and may and have and continue to choose not to worship God. So it is possible to have a situation where you don't worship God, where you don't want to accept God's plan for our lives. You choose a different route. But each of the choices we make, either way, have consequences. And so you will hear this God appealing in the third angel's message for people not to take the consequences of not worshiping him, because you know the consequences are dire, the consequences are horrifying, the consequences are painful. And so in his love, he wants us to be saved from the consequences. And so he gives this message to his church to warn the people to avoid the consequences of not worshiping God. So inherent in the call to worship then is a call to choose to and not to worship. But it is pure by choice.
I wanted to say something that we probably may have to come back to. The issue that there is consequences to not worshiping. It's as though there is cohesion, you know, to this worship, because either you worship or you don't. If you don't, then there's consequences, which is worrisome, because then it almost sounds that the freedom of choice that you are preaching about is not the freedom indeed, you know, because one should be free to choose whatever without any consequence, really, because it's a choice thing. However, we're going to come back to that, Mfundisi. But what I want to look at, you know, in this, because this is the first angel's message that you talk about, worship him who made the heavens and the earth. So it says fear God, and it says worship him. Is this worship out of fear?
Now, that's an important question you are asking. We dealt with it briefly yesterday.
Yes.
That the idea of worshiping God or being a fear God is not necessarily a concept of fear, but it is the concept of respect. He said the aspect of awe, give him awe, because this is what God is calling us to, honor him. The one, and he gives reasons for it, because he's the one who made the heavens and the earth. Now, it's important for us in the context of the everlasting gospel, which I'll keep coming back to, that we understand that God created human beings for his purposes, and his purposes are for their benefit. And so when he calls us to revere him, he is not calling us, as someone would say, against, I would say, if you don't worship, you are going to suffer the consequences. You are going to, but he wants us to benefit, because he knows without worshiping him, our lives are meaningless. Our lives can have the kind of thing he intends for us. He does not have the things he created us for. And so the call to worship is really a call of love.
You see, Mfundisi, right there.
To honor him, to respect him,
Yeah, right then, Food Desert, please allow me to interject here, because you're saying that the call to worship is a call of love. And when you read this text here, it says, fear God and give him glory because the hour of his judgment has come. Now, and then it says, worship him. Exactly. Now it talks about fearing God. You've explained that. And then it talks about judgment. Now, when you talk about judgment, you're not talking about a pleasant, event. I mean, when you talk about judgment, there's serious stuff there that should be terrifying. And so you fear God, you give him reverence, because the judgment is so this fear or this reverence is based on the fact that there's judgment that is coming, and because there's judgment coming, therefore worship. So it looks like there's a fear mongering here, as it were. And you sound like you're running away from it.
Very vital questions that you are asking, and it's important for us to explain. Now, I've explained the enemy rule from God or Lord against God.
You're right.
Judgment was from the beginning intended for him. It was intended to be meted out against him, because he had rebelled against God and has tried to instigate the whole world. Now, that time has come where God is saying, it's enough. There's a judgment that's going to come. There are multiple judgments, in fact, that are going to come, not just one, but multiple judgments. But this is the beginning of the judgment period. And he's saying, the hour of him judging those who have chosen to reject him, those who have chosen not to worship him, has come. The hour of him making a decision about who goes to spend eternity with him in worship, who does not, all of those, the moment has come, the hour has come, the era has come. And so it begins there. So God is saying, listen guys, I want you to escape the judgment. I did not intend this judgment against you, but I intended it against the enemy who has been instigating you, who has been forcing you or calling you to worship himself and other things. And even when you come to the second angel's message again, I'm just being confused in a way, but when you come to the second angel's message, there it says that system is collapsing. That system of worship that has been anti-God, anti the true worship, is collapsing. And I want to touch on another day maybe on the fact that we sometimes think of the collapsing or corrupt system of worship far away, but we could be caught up in it even in Africa as we worship ancestors. The move or movement that has come now where people are beginning to, even Christians and even Adventists, are beginning to be more keen on their ancestral worship. They want to worship their ancestors. That is part of the system God is saying is collapsing. That is part of what he is judging. That is what he is going to bring about to an end. And even the concept of the dead angel, the image or its representation, its forms, all its forms are going to collapse. And so God says, listen, that run into the ark before the judgment comes. Run and be safe before the judgment is going to take you out. So that's the context of the judgment. Again, the gospel, the everlasting gospel, the loving God, who wants his people to run away from these dangers that are impending.
Now, I think you've touched on it briefly, the issue of the choice, which is the freedom that a person, because you're saying that this God does not force anyone into worship. So this worship really is a call out of love, as you suggest. And so you worship because you have called, you've been called out of love, and you're suggesting that. Well and good. If you then do not choose to worship, and you choose rather to say, nah, I'm okay. I don't need to. I'm not against this God. It's okay. It's fine. He created the heavens and the earth. That's all right. But I'd rather just be and live on my own. You're then suggesting that that judgment has come to that particular person. And I don't see how is this, frankly, a freedom of choice. I mean, it looks like it's this way or no way.
Both ways have consequences. Both the choice to worship God and not to worship God has consequences. But God would rather say to you, you are safe with me. That's what he is saying in essence in this. In these three angels' conversations or messages,
right,
he's saying, if you choose to worship me, you are safe. It is a warning of love. It is saying, as I said yesterday, it's a parent saying, if you choose this way, you are safe. Sometimes message comes very strongly, very strongly, and sometimes in a negative light. That's why I'm saying it's important for us to understand it in the context of the gospel, because if the gospel is not there, if it is not the loving God who is saying it, it is coercion, then it is manipulation, then it is horrifying. But if you understand it from coming from the one who loves you, as Revelation 1 verse 18 says, the one who loves us, the one who died for you, the one who paid a huge price to save you from the trouble that you were destined for. If you understand it in that context, it makes all the difference than when you understand it in isolation. In isolation, it gives that impression that we are talking about. But in the context of the everlasting gospel, it is a loving God who intends the best. He says, I know what plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, plans not to harm you, plans to give you a future. So because you know who is it that is asking you to do this,
I wanted to come in. Yes, this is a beautiful, and you're putting it beautifully that it comes. And then I truly believe that you know, from the angle that you're approaching it, that it comes from the place of love. And it, depending on where you are and where, who do you think this God is, if it's a God who you believe is a God of love, etc., then quite frankly, it has no connotation of coercion, etc. We do know, however, that back in the centuries, I mean, this is well-recorded history, that many had to come to the conversion of into Christianity because they were coerced into it. You know, in the early church times, not even in the early church, you know, where the church was only known as the papal situation, people, converted to Christianity out of fear, and so. You then have this situation that talks about the end of times to people who really got into this thing, not out of love, but out of coercion. And so this, the concern really for this particular message, especially the first message, is that for a person who converted not because of, you know, they loved this, they had to, and then generations of their family came in and they just followed suit. Even to the day, actually, you know, in our homes, we say to our children, listen, this is the way we're going in this house. We wake up and we go to church, whether they go to Sunday or Sabbath. You're not going to stay in my house and you don't go to church. So you can see that when people are introduced to this thing, there's an element of fear. This is my house. You're not going to do this. And then somebody reads this message to say, but the hour of the judgment has come. You've got a choice to do this. Or if you don't do this, there's consequences. Can you see that the connotation is really not palatable here?
Very relevant discussion you're bringing from that perspective as well, because it is a helpful one to clarify. Indeed, it is true that those who embraced Christianity did not always understand it, in part because of what sounds very militaristic, sounds very terrifying, very fearful. But again, it is taking this this three angels message out of its context.
Right, right.
Because it then comes as a dry, terrifying message.
Mm.
If you don't do this, you'll be judged. God is going to be judged. So many people, even our parents, you are right, misunderstood the gospel and brought it about force.
Yeah.
Let me say this very clearly and very frankly.
Mm-hmm.
The gospel is about love. It cannot be forced.
Correct.
By fear.
The gospel
is about love. It is going to be love that must induce love. Only love evokes love. This is the way God operates. This is the way you will see why we are so romantic with Jesus and we don't like the God of the Old Testament. Because we... because the God of the Old Testament seems to be this forceful God.
Mm.
But Ellen G. White makes this point, and that in the Desire of Ages, she says, Christ came to clarify the one who is love. He came to magnify the God of love. If Christ had not come, we would have really gone away with this Old Testament aspect. Of God. We are involved here with the enemy in a great controversy, in a great war, in a war of politics, as I began.
Yeah.
In this war of politics, it is like when the ANC and the apartheid government were fighting, propaganda was used sometimes to tarnish the other's intentions. And so you find Satan trying to present this forceful God, because his argument in heaven was, God, you are forceful. God, you are demanding. God, you are unfair. You are making unfair judgments on people. I mean, unfair demands on people and on us as angels. So you can. So that propaganda has had success in many ways, and it has led to the aspect you are bringing, where people used crusades, that period of crusades, to force people to accept Jesus. Where people say in their homes, hey, listen here, I am not going to, I'm going to lock this house. You're not going to not worship here. In this house, this is how we do it. This is, again, a misunderstanding of God. It is a misrepresentation of the character of God. And these are the things that the three angels' message must do well to clarify, specifically in the context of the gospel, the everlasting gospel, and the nature of God.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, Mfundisi, our time is far spent. I was enjoying this particular conversation, but we're going to be picking it up tomorrow again at the same time and the same place. I must thank you so much for coming through this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Zama, for the opportunity. God bless you and your listeners.
Blessings to you. Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.